This is Melissa. It is Real History, and today is the, I don't know what day it is. It's the 19th of September, 2024. I had been talking with Mark in Sudbury early last month, about doing another Real History with him, middle of September. And he wrote me back an email and said, oh, I just came in from camp and I'm just grabbing a couple of things and I'm heading back out to camp and let's just do this later in the autumn because I'm going to spend as much time at camp as possible until November. So I love that way. As far as I know, only Canadians talk that way about their second place. Sometimes it's very humble. I know that Mark's is. It's his camp that he has made on his friend's property where his friend lives year-round. But camp is a Canadian way of saying where I go on the weekends in the summer or where I sometimes spend 2 weeks or more in the summertime. And in the case of Mark, he spends as much time as possible at camp, his home away from home. It's not that far from Sudbury, but that is camp. And what he does is just different. It's a change of pace. So he'll read a lot of books and listen to music and watch movies. And I'm sure he spends time walking about on the land out there too. It's a change of pace. So in the U.S., when we talk about camping, we have, you know, it's something in a motorhome or a trailer that I think they call those caravans in the U.K. or pitching a tent somewhere, and it'll be a destination event. You go for a week or two camping. But in Canada, it's camp. So I'm not talking to Mark today. And there's another fellow that I'm looking forward to talking to, Neil, in the northeast of the U.S. And Neil is from England, but he's lived here in the States for a long time. And he graciously offered not long ago that he would be a fill-in anytime I needed one. But I've had a push on lately because of extra reading in the Tragedy and Hope book club and just other things on my plate, as they say. And so I thought, well, let's just be flexible and sit down in front of the mic and say a little something. Now it is 11:30 on Thursday morning, and usually I do these things a bit earlier in the week so I can make a little illustrated video. But something happened Tuesday evening, and it doesn't really need to be gone into in any detail, but Tuesday into yesterday was, I won't call it lost time because I know where the time went, but I was out altogether from my normal routine and extremely sleep deprived. That was yesterday. That was Tuesday night and yesterday. And yesterday I got nothing done. And so what I had wanted to do yesterday was make the video for the book club recording that we did on Saturday. So I'm ambitious today. Today I think that I will be doing this little talk and putting it up and then illustrating the video for the book club and putting that up much later today. And then putting a title card and maybe a few extra images onto the second episode of Neil Foster's new Jack's Walk and Talk. So it's episode 2, and I don't know the title yet because I haven't watched it or listened to it, and I will title it after I know what he's talking about. So that will be tomorrow morning. So I had to sleep a lot last night because of my lost time. And I did not wake up until about 10 this morning, which is incredibly unusual. and I made a little something to eat and listened to a little music because that was my frame of mind. And that also is unusual. So this week, what I thought that I would tell you about today is a little bit of history, my own history of this last week, little highlights, and some just rambling histories of cutting through the matrix, mostly recent history, but some going back just a little bit. I don't even know how this takes form. This is just what I thought when I was lying in bed before I put the feet to the ground. As Alan would say, when the feet hit the ground, once more into the breach. So here I am. In Canada with Alan, we had days, of course, that you never knew what would happen. And Alan often said, anything can happen, any wrench can be thrown into the works. The day that you planned may not turn out to be the day that you have. But all that aside, any little drama or surprise or car trouble, that really, those were extremes in what was really rather a routine life, sets of work that were uniquely Alan's and work that was uniquely mine. I spent a lot of time in the kitchen, building and maintaining the fire, that kind of thing. And then I did a lot of emails and made orders and kept track of receipts and bookkeeping and, you know, just that type of thing. And then Alan was a research powerhouse. I still am amazed and in awe of how much research he could accomplish in one day. I always thought of us as like at least three people, maybe four, because I think if you have a committed couple, it's more than two people. You know, that there's the idea that the two become one, and that is true, but they also become three or four because what you can do together magnifies incredibly. And then for a long period of time, Jason was there living on the property in a trailer, and Jason recorded the shows live as they were happening, especially when Alan was on Republic Broadcasting Network. And then he uploaded those to all the websites. And Jason also took the transcripts and the translations that came in from people. It was in the beginning mostly Linda that was doing the transcripts, and then it was Diana that was doing the transcripts. Those were the English versions. And then volunteers from all around the world did foreign language transcripts, translations. And Jason would put those through a rigorous spell check, formatting, and then they all had to get formatted into HTML. So that was a process. Then the pages had to be changed, and then he would, you know, upload new transcripts. So really, with the three of us there for those years, Jason was there from 2007 until really late 2013, although he was back and forth a bit into the early or late winter of 2014. And the time that he was back and forth, he was really training me how to edit audios and how to upload to the website, how to work with HTML. So having Jason go, he got married and went on with life. And that was a huge chunk of time for a young man to give and greatly appreciated. But that took Alan and I to just Alan and I. But again, still, it felt like a sizable team because of all that Alan was able to accomplish and all the things that I could do to help him. And then that time between Alan passing and coming here in the late, late summer of 2021 was kind of a blur, because I had it in my mind immediately that I needed, that, you know, maintaining the websites, there has to be consistency. And I really think that I only missed a week in July of updating the website, because that was when I was physically moving down from Canada. And just go, 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 go. And Weston had been writing to Alan for years, young fellow, and he volunteered to come out and help me. And the when he arrived was, I think, early December of 2021, maybe a little earlier. But all in all, he was here for about 15 months helping, and that was great. And now just an update there. He did go back to his home state in the spring of 2023, and he's teaching high school. And I think that's a good fit for him. He is actually doing, it's a program where people who want to homeschool their children, so they want to have control over the curriculum, they want it to be individually tailored for their children and maybe not quite so much social engineering, can meet with him and work on the curriculum. So he is not actually teaching the high school curriculum. He's using the facility there and the space there, but he's working with a very small handful of high school students in what's closer to a homeschooling setup than school. So that is that. But when he was here, I taught him how to work with the HTML and how to edit a little bit, and I think ultimately we decided that editing the audio was me, and he did other things, and he did a little bit of work. He got some transcripts up, which was great, and so he also set up, you know, started up the YouTube channel and the BitChute channel and the Rumble and Odyssey. So he physically went on there and made a, you know, created a username and a password, and then figured out how the uploading worked and so forth. And in the early days, he also downloaded a program called Shotcut. And with Shotcut, he taught himself how to make little videos. So he started at first illustrating the excerpt series of videos that Mike in Canada, excerpt series that Mike did, we just put up in audio form. And in fact, when Mike started that, it was just me by my lonesome. And so I put them up, and he sent them to me, and I uploaded them. And then Weston was using those to learn how to make little videos. And then eventually, Mike decided that it would be fun to illustrate those videos himself, and he did that. And now the excerpt videos are being done by another listener. So it's a nice, I like, obviously, I couldn't do the output that happens on all the different channels all by myself. And I am appreciative of people. The latest is Neil, who said, oh, I think I might record these walks with Jack. And so it's nice to have these things to offer you. When Weston was here, the rhythm that I was in was much closer to Canada, and I was comfortable with that. And that meant that I spent a lot of time in the kitchen. And I also was able to spend a lot of time answering emails. And so I cooked lunch every day for my Aunt Betty and my brother and Weston and myself. And I would listen to Alan talks while I cooked in the kitchen, or maybe something else that I needed to hear. It was a very nice rhythm, something that I was comfortable with. And now he's gone, left in the spring of 2023, and I had to just jump in there and learn how to make those videos myself. And that's, so I do the Redux videos, and I do the Real History videos. I keep pretty busy, and it became apparent to me immediately that certain things just had to fall by the wayside, as they say. And one of those was cooking lunch every day. So now I'm lucky if I can make a meal for Betty and myself and my brother once a week. That's good. I do call Betty every morning, and I ask her how she slept and what she ate. And I talked to her this morning. I forgot to ask her what she ate, but she was doing well, and that was the important thing. And I told her I was going to be really, really busy yet today, cranking out all this stuff, and I would call her. I'm taking her to a doctor's appointment first thing in the morning. I went to see her last evening, and I brought her some grapes and a few tangerines, and I brought her a card, Prince, that I did a real history with in the spring, wrote me a letter more than a month ago, and I tried to call him a couple of times. Now I know not to call until after 5 p.m. because I did reach him on Saturday. But he wrote me a letter, and he was suggesting some talks that I might want to study and put up. And I looked at them, and May 26, 2011, and I saw, yes, I put that up as a redux on October 8, 2023. And he said an old preacher had said Satan couldn't take over the world without the computer. And I remember Alan mentioned that a few times. And boy, isn't that the truth. February 14, 2006. And I put that up as a redux, March the 19th, 2023. Spirituality and the Earth Matrix. June 24, 2007. Red Ice Radio, and I put that up as a redux, March the 31st, 2024. But Prince told me in the letter that he hadn't been feeling well. He called it chemtrail poisoning, sinus problem, and that is probably what caused it. And so I had tried to call him a couple, three times to see how he was and couldn't reach him. And I was concerned, and I finally got him on Saturday afternoon, and we spoke for a few minutes, and I said, you want to do another real history with me coming up sometime? And he said, yes. And I said, well, do you still want to talk about forever poisons? The way that that food and water is poisoned in a way that never leaves the food and the water. It was something that he mentioned briefly in the real history that we did in the spring. And he said, yes, but I sent you another letter. Well, I hadn't received that one yet. He said, I sent another letter. So after you read that one, there's something else that I want to talk about. So I went to the mailbox on Monday, and I got the other letter that Prince was talking about. And I will save the contents more or less for when we do a real history. But he had included a card for my Aunt Betty. It had a clip on there. It said, for Betty. And it was just so sweet. It was a belated birthday card. And so last evening, let me back up. Last evening was Wednesday night. I'm going to go back to Tuesday. Tuesday, I was working. I was editing the audio of the book club that Darren and I did on Saturday. And I got a message from my sister-in-law. My oldest brother, he's been of several things in the course of his long career. He had a business degree, and he's run businesses, and he's been a contractor and so forth. But his real love is he's a cowboy singer. And he has done that his whole life. And he really looks the part too. So he plays guitar and sings songs, and he has a really extensive repertoire. And he does parties and events and you name it, and clubs and so forth. But that's what he loves to do, is sing cowboy music. So now, country western has never really been my go-to music, even though I'm a Texan. But I do like to listen to him sing. And so I get a message from my sister-in-law, and she said, oh, the Songbird. And that's a little club in the next town over, small town, but next town over. And the Songbird is having a guitarist, a world-class guitarist, in this evening, 7:30. Now, I got that message from her at, 4:30 in the afternoon. And I was really tired already. This was even before my lost day. And I was trying to get this job done, and I'm like, I don't think I can do that. You know, world-class guitarist. I didn't know anything about, it was a woman, and I'm like, I don't know, I never heard of her. So I went back to, I just told her, I doubt it. I said, there's about a 30% chance I'll show up. I went back to work on the audio, and I realized I am exhausted. So it's like 5 o'clock now. I can't function. I kept trying. It's 5:30. I give up. So I took a nap. About 6:45, I woke up and I thought, you've got a choice. You can go edit that audio, or you can go to the club and listen to the guitarist. And I said, let's go to the club. So I got in the car and I got down to my other brother's office, which is just like 3 blocks away. And he's the brother that I live with. And I walked in and I said, hey, I'm going over to the Songbird to the concert. And he said, oh, okay, well, I'll come. And I said, well, okay, great. Are you driving or me? And he said, I'll drive. So we drove over there, and we really got in there about 2 minutes before the concert was going to start. And that's another reason why I don't go out much. It's like that, you know, the tickets were $25, but I hold on to money like with a very tight grip. But no, I went. And so we paid for our tickets, and we walked into, it's really a room. It is a long room, so it's hard to describe, okay? It's just, it seats maybe 150 people tops on folding chairs. The acoustics are really good, and the guy that runs it gets in some good people. But I've only been there once before with my brother and sister-in-law. So I saw them sitting down, but because I hadn't communicated that we were coming, that I was on my way or whatever, they didn't save seats. She didn't think I was coming. And there were only 2 visible seats. There were actually 4 visible seats on that half of the room when you walked in. But somebody had saved the place of 2 of the seats. So we had the other 2 on the outside of that row. And as we were walking to those 2 seats, I looked over and I did a big, huge wave and a smile, because I realized that I was looking at my Aunt Betty's ear, nose, throat doctor, who I know he was my dad's ear, nose, throat doctor. And I think I mentioned before that he was so nice early last month when I took Betty there, but she ended up crying in the parking lot because we still hadn't solved her problem of dizziness. But there he was with his wife, and I knew them, and I thought, that's funny. So we were sitting right in front of the doctor and his wife, and caught up a little bit with them, and then the lights went down. The owner of the club got up and he announced Anna Vidovich. Anna Vidovich is a world-class classical guitarist. And I had actually looked her up before I went to the club, and I saw that, and there was like part of me going, ah, because I said, oh, I'm going to teach myself how to play guitar, and that lasted all of, I don't know, a minute. I did learn how to restring the guitar, although I'm not sure if I could do it again without much great effort. I've done it twice. But my guitar has sat in its coffin all summer, and there's just something about going to see somebody play that I'm like, oh, no. But the lights went down. She sat down, and she started to play Bach. And I started to get tears in my eyes because it was beautiful, beautiful. And her playing was incredible. And the sound was amazing. And I was really thankful that I had decided to go and listen to it. It was that kind of spirit rejuvenating thing that we need to do every once in a while. So those two seats that were saved, they just stayed empty. And towards the very end of the first half of the show, a woman walked in with a teenage boy, and the man who was sitting to my left motioned happily and pointed at the seats, and the teenage boy, I think he was probably about 15, sat down, and then the man motioned for the woman to come in too, and she sat down right next to me. And it was dark, but as she was walking by and then she sat down, I looked at her and I realized, oh my goodness, this is Betty's primary physician. So she sat down right next to me, and then the song proceeded, and the last song of that half of the show, and then the lights came up in intermission. And at intermission, I turned to her and said, I'm Melissa, I'm Betty's niece, and you know, I gave her the last name and whatnot. And I could see it was out, because I always go with Betty to the appointments, but I'm not in a patient room at her office, and so there's a little bit of recognition, but also some confusion. But then she ended up leaving with the young boy and did not come back for the second half of the show. But during the intermission, I looked at the man who was sitting to my left, and he had four children around him. And I realized that I knew his face, I recognized his face. And had I seen him in the paper? Had I seen him online? What was it? And then I'm like, oh, he's the Russian that owns that little art gallery that's, you know, and I had gone in there one day and I saw some of my uncle's prints for sale in his gallery. And I had seen a picture of the gallery owner and the artist. He is, as I said, Russian. He is an artist and he owns a gallery. And he had my uncle's prints for sale. My uncle has been gone for about 6 years now, I think. So my uncle was a well-known artist in the area. You know, not like world famous or anything, but everybody in Texas, especially everybody in North Texas, especially everybody in this region, who follows art at all, would know him. And my cousin is his son and is living and is also a very well-known Texas artist. So I said, oh, you own the gallery. I put it together. And I said, I'm Melissa. I'm the niece of and the cousin of, and I named the artist. And he said, oh, yeah. He said, well, I had two of your uncle's paintings in the gallery, not just the prints. I had two, but he said, now there is a family in Russia that has one of your uncle's paintings. They bought it and had it sent back to Russia. And he said, my wife has one of the paintings and one of his paintings in the bedroom. And I said, oh, that's great. And he said, well, come by the gallery sometime. He told me when he was there and so forth. And then I said, you know, I go with my aunt every time she has a doctor's appointment, which are more frequent now, and I noticed that she has some of your, that the doctor has some of your prints in her lobby, in her waiting area. And I said, one day I was just sitting there looking at them going, those are really nice, and they seem familiar. And then I realized that, yes, I was familiar with the artist. I knew that he was the Russian artist. This is unusual in this part of the world. And I said, well, it makes sense that you're friends with the doctor because she's Russian and you're Russian. And he said, well, that's my wife. So I had been sitting next to the artist's wife, my Aunt Betty's doctor. And he introduced me to the four remaining children, the boy, and she had to go, obviously. He had some commitment early the next morning, and she had to get him home, etc. But his four children that were with him were lovely. And I didn't get the two boys were just kind of squirming around, and he didn't introduce their names. But he introduced the youngest little girl, and he said, this is Gabriella. And I said, oh, Gabriella, I said, just today I was having a Skype call with a Gabriella in Germany, a German Gabriella. And she just beamed and she said, I don't know anybody else named Gabriella. And then her older sister, who was just as cute as she could be, piped up and said, my name is Victoria. And I said, oh, like the queen. And she said, yes, I'm a queen. But I just thought, what are the odds of deciding to go to a concert that happened to be a world-famous classical guitarist and sitting in front of my aunt's ear, nose, throat doctor and sitting right beside my aunt's primary care physician and an artist and gallery owner who had featured my uncle and cousin. This is the beauty. This drove me crazy when I was young. I couldn't wait to get out of the area because everybody knew you, and you just felt like you were living in a fishbowl, you know. But that's the beauty of it now to me, is that in a small area, there is it's not so much like a fishbowl now. It's just cozy. So Aunt Betty was delighted with her card. She just loved it. And I told her a little bit about Prince, who he was, what he had done, where he lived. And she's mystified why I want to talk about her at all. and just stunned that someone that she doesn't know would send her a birthday card, but she loved it. And she really enjoyed. She just couldn't believe that I sat in front of her ENT doctor, and I sat next to, briefly, her primary doctor. She's just so happy that I go with her now to all those appointments, because the Russian accent is quite heavy. And she said, I can't understand a word she's saying. But the story about her artist husband and putting it all together, the art in the waiting room and the children, and just hearing all of this, the fact that they had one of her brother's paintings in the bedroom, you know, that uncle lived with her for the last 10 years of his life, and she took care of him, fed him, and as he declined, she was there, just as she was so helpful with my father. The whole story, I think the coziness of a right-sized world, it just pleased her. Other highlights of my week and having to do with real history, I had heard an interview, I think I've heard snippets of him before, but he really didn't come on my, you know how like you're aware of something, but they come on the radar and then you really are aware of what they are doing and what they're saying. And that happened with me a few weeks ago with somebody by the name of David A. Hughes. And I don't really have his bio in my mind yet, but I think he's a former academic, and he just basically got railroaded out of academia because anybody that's not towing the line will not survive. And he had different ways of looking at things, but I believe that his field is, I know it's history, and I believe his field of specialization is German history. But he has been talking a lot about technocracy, where we are now, what the last few years have been about, and where we're headed. And so I listened to some of his interviews, and I read some of his substacks, and I thought, well, that might be a good real history. And I tracked him down. I sent him an email and introduced myself and gave him a few videos. And he said, yes, I will be happy to do one of your episodes with you. Now, I don't have my calendar in front of me, but I believe the date that we have settled on is the 17th of October. So we'll actually record probably a couple of days earlier, but the 17th of October, I will be talking with David A. Hughes. And I mention this because there are a few things that might be interesting to you. On his Substack, he has a download. It's a free download of a huge book, but you can download it and print it out. That is what I did. And this is volume one. I think volume two is coming, or volume two may be out there, but it's only for sale. I don't know. I don't have those particulars yet. But the title of volume one is COVID-19, Psychological Operations, and the War for Technocracy. So I've begun reading this, and I want to say I'm always looking at places where I agree and things that will be useful to know for me, for you, and so that's what I'm focusing on. But naturally, as I'm reading, I'm seeing points that I don't agree with and things, you know, I'm sorry, I always see things through the Allen lens, that this system of control is actually ancient, really ancient, and that money is the first con. And so with those as starting points, I will always have different conclusions than other people. But overall, I really think that there is a lot of good information here. And right now I'm in early reading days on this book. I am into chapter two, but I have found some really fascinating things. Let's see, let's get over to chapter 2. Let's turn these noisy pages. Why didn't I mark that before I started recording? So chapter 2 is entitled Shock and Stress. And I think that for longtime listeners of Alan, some of these things about the study of the mind, how to break it down and then repattern it, if you will, some of these areas will be quite familiar. But right at the opening of the chapter, he quotes Orwell from 1984. Power is in tearing human minds to pieces and putting them together again in new shapes of your own choosing. And that's a really good quote to remember. And then when he got into the Tavistock Institute and all that came out of that, you know, you think that you know something. Oh, yeah, I've read that. I've looked into that. But he really gets, he covers the Tavistock Institute quite thoroughly. And there were things that I learned that I didn't know before. So I am enjoying it. But like I said, his conclusion, I believe, is right on. And that is we are into technocratic control. And I like in his book, he dedicates it. He writes, dedicated to all who are actively resisting the global technocratic coup. What I get when I listen to him and others or read his work and the work of others, that whether they are newly arriving at these conclusions or whether they've been here for a long time, is a sense of urgency, that somehow in their lives, knowing this information has profoundly changed them, and it has changed how their lives run on a day-to-day basis. And when I look at output that people do, that the content that they create, you know, to take the more modern way of putting it, and I see no matter whether they have help or assistance or a secretary or a team, there are genuine people out there, plenty of them, who don't like what's happening, and who, having an inkling that this is happening, has changed their lives profoundly, and it's changed the entire direction. In the case of David Hughes, of his scholarly work, of how he spends his time, what he researches, it is a 180. So I've said that is October 17, but meanwhile, coming up in 2 days, I wanted to let you know about something that I have signed up for this Saturday, September the 21st, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Time. This is entitled A Symposium, Omniwar. This is put out by the Study Group on Technology and Power, Beyond Electoral Theater. A stealth war to enslave humanity is being waged from the cell to the stratosphere. Effective resistance begins by understanding what we are facing. This will be hosted and moderated by Catherine Austin Fitz, and the panelists will include Patrick Wood. And Patrick Wood, longtime listeners will be familiar with, this is Technocracy News. Patrick Wood has covered technocracy very thoroughly for many years. Years ago, he co-wrote a book with Anthony C. Sutton entitled, I believe, Trilaterals Over Washington. And then he himself published maybe 12 years ago or so a book entitled Technocracy Rising. So, like, Patrick Wood has a leading voice in understanding what is technocracy, where does it spring from, how does it work. And then David A. Hughes will be on the panel, and Daniel Brody. I just posted something by him not that many weeks ago. I haven't followed his work closely. Petra mentioned him and I think has followed him more closely. I was kind of on the fence about a slant of a particular article, but it's that you can't judge by one article. It's a body of work. So, and Lisa Johnson. I'll just scroll down here and see here. Let's see. Daniel Brody is a professor of rhetoric and applied linguistics in the Graduate School of Intercultural Communication at Okinawa Christian University and a former imagery analyst with the U.S. Army. So like I said, Lisa Johnson will be talking transhumanism and COVID-19. Military operations in civilian disguise? Lisa Johnson has undergraduate degrees in media studies and behavioral science with an honors thesis in neuroimmunology and an MA in clinical psychology and a PhD on the psychological processes involved in manipulating reality perception. Academia is a double-edged sword. But as David Hughes said in his dedication, to all who are actively resisting. So people who are actively resisting, real, genuine people, come from all walks of life. People who don't have any education past secondary level or postgraduate credentials, just people. And resistance, if that's a good word to use, needs all kinds of people. Of course, seeing things through the lens of Alan, like the individual resistance. And Prince always has good things to say about the individual. Just little snippets, because I like getting those letters. His little things that he's gleaned from Alan. You must go through hell before you see the light of heaven. We are spiritual beings put here for a purpose. Only you will know if you made it. Be individual. Know thyself. Think for yourself. Be your own champion. But in the last two letters that I have gotten from Prince, he's quoted that bit from Alan, sing your song. Remember, sing your song and steal some time. So I'll admit, a little bit of feeling of guiltiness when I get up away from my routine. My life takes place more or less at my desk, Command Central. I remember when I first got to Canada, and we were in the room where Alan's desk and his little recording area. It's a microphone and the mixing board and the computer and the keyboard. And he said, "This is Command Central. This is where the magic happens." And I think of my own desk as my Command Central, and I would not describe it as where the magic happens. But the magic did happen with Alan. So I said a few highlights of this week, and then I'll wrap it up. I wanted to mention that there is a USB project that I've been working on that I actually had in my mind to do sometime back in 2022, and it is finally coming alive. And in 2022, I thought, well, I'll back up. All of Alan's talks, his audio and the video that he's done, take up about 65 or 68 discs. I can't remember now the exact count. And always in Canada, those were $40 a piece. I think there might have been one that was a little cheaper, and, you know, but $40 was the average price. So if you collected all of his material in disc form, that would be pretty pricey. Well, one of the first things that I did was I cut the price in half. I called it my antidote to inflation. So I made each disc $20. But still, if you have 65 or 68 discs, that's about, what, $1,200-$1,300 to collect them all. I wanted to do these in a beautiful way so that they were packaged beautifully. And I just had that in my head. And I contacted different companies, and I finally found someone in New York. I liked him and started that process in January of 2023 of asking questions. And I sent him a ballpark of the data total. And then I got a ballpark estimate back, and it was several thousands of dollars to do it the way that I wanted to do it. And I couldn't conceive that I would, you know, be able to do that. But talking later in the year to a listener, and I mentioned that, and he said, he was just supportive. You know, I'm behind you on this. I think you should do this. I think it's a good idea. And then I still didn't do anything with it. But in the spring, with some volunteer help, I'll just say that, I managed to get going on this in a real way. A longtime listener, volunteered to do the data assembly. And I sent them a copy of all the discs, a big pile of discs. And they worked with that. Plus, there are other things that were on the website. There were things, in other words, available on the website that were never offered on disc. So it's a matter of making sure that everything that we wanted to have, that all of Alan's work, plus that had been available in disc form, plus the things that we wanted to add to it, were organized in a good way. And this volunteer did this huge job of data organization. And then, I'll leave these people nameless for now because I haven't asked if I could use their name, but a couple of listeners who are artists, I told them what I was doing, and I told them what my vision was artistically. And I had all of the photographs and the images organized by flash drive package. There are 7 in total. And I sent this to them that I was working on, and they volunteered. I was going to, you know, just kind of do it myself. And they said, oh, we'd love to do this. And I have to tell you, that really kicked it up a notch. So what we have on these 7 discs is, it meets my expectation. It far exceeds my expectation of what this project would be. And it's just about to go into mass production. And I have the live samples. There'll be another round of samples because there were a couple of little data errors and a couple of art errors. And those are being corrected right now. But I have what I think is good enough to show you, just to give you a little glimpse of what is coming that will be available to order. And my idea was to show in these 7 discs the passage of time of Alan. So you see him in the first as a younger man with his guitar. And there's the passage of time through the 7. And also, the 3 dogs of his adult life are featured. So it's Bobby, Meg, and Hamish. And I'm just so delighted, thrilled, and excited to see this project come into a life of its own. And I hope that you'll, I'm not exactly sure of the price yet. I think it will be an individual price and then a reduced price if you order all seven at one time. But what I do know is this will be about half the price of if you purchased all of the discs. So that is that. And another thing that I did this week was I had a long conversation, the first visual conversation with the camera on Skype, with a couple that I've been communicating with for a long time by snail mail, and then slowly, you know, we'll get into that. I think I'm going to do a real history with them upcoming. But I love G&G. G&G. There is the G from Scotland, and he is married to the G from Germany. So they are G&G. And they're just the best. And I had a long conversation with them because we are putting the finishing touches, they are, I should say, on the German translation of Waiting for the Miracle. And this is something that they did and I've had for a while, and they've got the artwork now, and they've got the title page. So I can say that as of now, there is a German edition of Waiting for the Miracle. For a long time, we've had a Spanish and a Portuguese. Alan, as you know, didn't do much selling and advertising, but years ago, someone volunteered to do Waiting for the Miracle in Spanish, and someone else did it in Portuguese, and now we have it in German. But more delightful than seeing this project come to its conclusion was seeing G&G actually putting a face to their lovely voices. And I already gave you the name of the German G, and that's Gabriella. So I may as well say it's Graham from Scotland and Gabriella from Germany. And we had a great long conversation. And upcoming, I'll be having another conversation with a young man in Australia. I don't know that it'll be a real history, although I've asked him if he wants to, but we'll just be talking about a project that he just decided to do and actually did and delivered, and I think it's a really nice one. He has taken some of Alan's interviews that he's done with other people, and he's put those transcripts together in a PDF form, so it's like a little collection. And I think that that's something I'm just talking with him hopefully next week to see what it looks like visually and how, if there's any changes or so forth before that goes up on the website. So I'm sure that I have missed lots of the highlights of the week, but I wanted to say something. I don't think this will be a heavily illustrated talk today because I would just like to get it up there. I called this episode, when I woke up this morning and kind of had the ideas toss around in my head, I said this is going to be called Get a Life, because I think I was talking about Prince saying sing your song and steal some time, and then I just kind of interrupted myself as I often do to go on to something else. But when Alan gave that talk in 2007, February 28, perhaps my favorite talk, I often say that it is, he gave the story of how some tribes, some Indian tribes, use the song as a metaphor for your life. So you have to sing your song. It's your life. And sometimes when I am here at my command station, I forget to sing my song. I forget to live my life. because I have what David Hughes calls that active resistance. And I've had it since I discovered Alan's work. And it puts the act of resistance, the act of standing up and saying no, ahead of everything else. And I'll tell you frankly that part of life, well, for me, this may not be true for everyone, but for me, life and loss has my mind in a place that, yes, I will say, would I rather be in another time, in another place? Would I rather be in another time, in another place with Alan? Yes, I would. But that's not how life works. Change is ceaseless, and time moves, and it doesn't stand still, except for those brief, brief moments that we must supply for ourselves. Is it when we walk our dog or pet the cat? Is it when we're out in the garden? Where is it where your life just moves at a different pace, where you're actually living it? And so I forget to get a life. And that is it. You take care. If you want to, I'll put up a link to this Omnivore Symposium on Saturday. It's free. And enjoy the music that I have tucked in here.
Singing, it felt like Christmas.